The Prime Minister of Iraq, Iyad Alawi, is in the United States this week. He speaks to a joint session of Congress on Thursday. On Friday, he addresses the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Despite the turmoil in Iraq, Alawi maintains he will not postpone national elections scheduled to take place in Iraq before the end of January. I'm joined now by two close observers of Iraq's transition from Saddam Hussein's regime. Larry Diamond is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and Noah Feldman is an associate professor at the New York University School of Law. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Both have been advisors to the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. Let's start here with Noah Feldman. Is the current timetable, does January make any sense at all? If you look at the map of Iraq, you see flames coming out from cities that are under the control of the insurgency.
Whether we'll actually succeed in having elections in January is uncertain, but once the date has been set, it's very difficult to back away from it without communicating to Iraqis that actually the United States is not really giving them true sovereignty.
And Larry Diamond?
Well, I essentially agree with Noah, and I would go actually one step further. Keep in mind, first of all, that it was a great compromise for Ayatollah Sistani and the many, many Iraqis, particularly in the Shiite South, who revere him and follow his leadership, to agree to wait until January of 2005 for elections. This interim government is creeping along with really very, very little political legitimacy. I think Iraq will become increasingly ungovernable if we don't have elections for a more representative and legitimate government within the next few months.
And Larry Diamond, continuing there from the Hoover Institution, explain to us, please, the way the election is going to work in Iraq, at least in theory.
Well, the plan that the United Nations has chosen for Iraq is proportional representation in a single nationwide district, which ironically is precisely the system that Israel has. This means that there will be no individual districts. Each party will submit a national list and get a proportion of seats equivalent more or less to its proportion of the vote. The problem with this system is that if you need to suspend voting in one section of the country or in some areas of the country, which I think for Fallujah, Ramadi, perhaps all of Al-Anbar province is probably going to be very, very likely, then you risk permanently disenfranchising that area when you go ahead with what are otherwise supposed to be nationwide elections in this one district.
You mean because of security reasons? There's civil war, in fact, going on in those cities.
Exactly, and there could be administrative problems in other areas that emerge at the last minute. But basically, I don't think it is feasible that the whole country can be secure enough to hold elections by January, but it is feasible that most of the country might be.
Noah Feldman, explain to us why the country, how did it happen this way? Aren't there 18 provinces in Iraq? Why wasn't the country divided up that way?
Well, there were 18 under Saddam, and those administrative divisions, in theory, remain in place. The problem is that those provinces are themselves the subject of controversy. The Kurds in the north believe that those provinces that are majority Kurdish are a country, or at least an independent entity, called Kurdistan. Others in the rest of the country strongly disagree with this and think there is a single unified country. So if you'd had to divide up the district for the national election, you might have had so much disagreement about what those districts should be that the election couldn't have gone forward, and that's the main reason that we see this compromise treating the entire country as a single district.
Now, we have Prime Minister Alawi in this country. He's going to go to the United Nations, and he has to convince the leaders there that he can have free and fair elections. The New York Times is reporting that American commanders are planning a year-end offensive this year against the rebel-held areas. I don't know if that promise is going to be enough. How can you get the UN to send election officials to Iraq until there is adequate security there?
The key is to make the international community believe that they won't lose observers in the same way that the United Nations very tragically lost almost all of its team that had been in Iraq back in the summer of 2003. And I'm not sure how that's going to be doable. I should also note, though, that from the perspective of the present government, there's some benefit to delaying elections because as long as elections are delayed, they get to remain in power. So their motives are not absolutely certain either.
And Larry Diamond, what's your feeling about the security situation there? You touched on it before, but how could there be a legitimate election in all of Iraq with so much pressure on the people there and so much fear?
I think it's going to be exceedingly difficult. In fact, it's almost impossible to imagine unless the security situation improves. But, you know, the security situation varies in the country, and there are portions of it that are relatively calm. And this certainly would not be the first country in history that had to go to the polls in a state of some insecurity and terrorist violence. And the problem, Noah, is that you have to weigh the danger of continuing with a government that has very weak legitimacy against the danger of voting in circumstances that are inevitably going to be less than fully secure.
Noah Feldman, what do you think about Mr. Diamond's analysis of that? Let's say we skip Fallujah, just leave Fallujah out of the picture, go ahead and vote in January and take what you can get.
I think Larry is absolutely right that that's the cost-benefit analysis. But I think that the real concern is not only that if, let's say, the Sunni triangle is left out of elections, that the civil war will get worse there. It's also that the thing that this first elected body is supposed to do is negotiate a national constitution. And that negotiation is basically a power-sharing arrangement between the different groups in the society. And if one of the major groups, and in fact the most disgruntled group in the society, doesn't even arrive at the table for those negotiations because it hasn't elected any representatives, because it hasn't participated in elections, that's pretty close to a guarantee that those constitutional negotiations will be a failure. They'll produce a document, but it won't stand for anything even looking like a real power-sharing arrangement.
You mean the rebels wouldn't be at the table?
Well, it's a subtle business, because people who are terrorists, we don't want to have sitting at the table, but people who are Sunni Arabs who might be sympathetic in some way to the Sunni insurgency do need to be at the table, because that remains a large constituency in the country. 15 or 20% of the population are Sunni Arabs, and they're not all terrorists, but they all want to make sure that their constituency has a real role and representation in the future of Iraq.
If I could jump in here, I agree with what Noah Feldman just said, but let me put two additional twists on it. First of all, something would be better than nothing. Moreover, there are going to be two functions of the transitional government. One is to draft the constitution, and the other is to govern the country. And I think the cost of continuing well past January, months into 2005, with no elections, are really frightening, frankly, to the viability of political order in Iraq.
Larry Diamond is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Noah Feldman is an associate professor at the New York University School of Law. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you. Awesome.